Chapter 2. Reagan lay on her back on Dr. Klein's examining table with her arms and legs bowed outward. Taking her foot in both his hands, Klein flexed it toward her ankle, held it there in tension, and then suddenly released it. The foot relaxed into normal position. He repeated the procedure several times, but without any variance in the result. He seemed dissatisfied. When Reagan abruptly sat up and spat in his face, he instructed a nurse to remain in the room and return to his office to talk to Chris. It was April 26th. He'd been out of the city both Sunday and Monday, and Chris hadn't reached him until this morning to relate the happening at the party and the subsequent shaking of the bed. Say it was actually moving? Yes, it was moving. Well, for how long? I don't know, maybe 10, maybe 15 seconds. I mean, that's all of it I saw. Then she sort of went stiff and wet the bed. I don't know, maybe she'd wet it before. I just don't know. But then all of a sudden she was dead asleep, and she never woke up until the next afternoon. Klein entered his office thoughtfully. Well, what is it? Chris asked, her tone anxious. When she'd first arrived, Klein had reported his suspicion that the shaking of the bed had been caused by a seizure of clonic contractions, an alternating tensing and relaxing of the muscles. The chronic form of such a condition, he told her, was clonus, which often indicated a lesion in the brain. Well, the test was negative, he said, then described the procedure, explaining that in clonus, the alternate flexing and releasing of the foot would have triggered a run of clonic contractions. But as he sat at his desk, Klein still seemed worried. Has she ever had a fall? He asked. You mean like on the head? Well, yes. No, not that I know of. Childhood diseases? Just the usual. Measles and mumps, chickenpox. Any sleepwalking history? Not until now. Now? She was walking in her sleep at the party? Well, yeah, I thought I told you. I mean, she still doesn't know what she did that night. And there's other stuff, too, that she doesn't remember. Reagan was asleep. An overseas telephone call from Howard. How's Rags? Thanks a lot for the call on her birthday, Howard. I was stuck on a yacht. Now, for Christ's sakes, lay off of me. I called her the minute I was back in the hotel. Oh, yeah, sure. She didn't tell you? You talked to her? Yeah. That's why I thought I'd better call you. What the hell's going on with her, Chris? What do you mean, what's going on with her? She just called me a cocksucker and hung up the phone. Recounting the incident to Klein, Chris explained that when Reagan had finally awakened, she had no memory whatever of either the telephone call or of what had happened on the night of the dinner party. Then perhaps she wasn't lying about the moving of the furniture. I don't get you. Well, she moved it herself, let's say, but perhaps while in a state of automatism. It's like a trance state. The subject doesn't know or remember what he's doing. But there's this great big heavy bureau in her room made out of teak wood. It's got to weigh about half a ton, Doc. I mean, how could she have moved that? Well, extraordinary strength is pretty common in pathology. Oh, really? How? How come? Klein shrugged. Who knows? Now, besides what you've told me, he continued, have you noticed any other bizarre behavior? Well, she's gotten real sloppy. No, bizarre, Klein repeated. Doc, for Reagan, that's bizarre. Oh, wait a second. Wait. Yeah, there's this. You remember that Ouija board she's been playing with, you know, Captain Howdy? The internist nodded. Yeah, the fantasy playmate. Well, now she can hear him. The doctor leaned forward, folding his arms atop the desk, his eyes narrowed, his manner alert. She can hear him? Yeah. Yesterday morning, I could hear her talking to Howdy in her bedroom. I mean, she'd talk and then seemed to wait as if she were playing with the Ouija board. But when I peeked inside the room, there wasn't any Ouija board there, just Rags. and she was nodding her head. I mean, just like she was agreeing with what he was saying. Did she see him? I don't think so. She sort of had her head to the side, the way she does when she listens to records. The doctor nodded thoughtfully. Yeah. Yes, I see. Any other phenomena like that? Does she see things, smell things? Oh, yes, smell, Chris remembered. She keeps smelling something bad in her bedroom. Something burning? Hey, yeah, that's right. How do you know that? Well, it's sometimes a symptom of a type of disturbance in the chemico-electrical activity of the brain. In the case of a daughter, in the temporal lobe, you see. He put an index finger to the front of his skull, up here in the forward part of the brain. Now, it's rare, but it does cause bizarre hallucinations, and usually just before a convulsion. I suppose that's why it's mistaken for schizophrenia so often. But it isn't schizophrenia. It's produced by a lesion in the temporal lobe. So, since the test for Clonus wasn't conclusive, I think I'd like to give her an EEG, an electroencephalograph. It'll show us the pattern of her brain waves. It's a pretty good test of abnormal functioning. But you think that's it, huh? Temporal lobe? Well, she does have the syndrome, Mrs. McNeil. For example, the untidiness, the pugnacity, behavior that's socially embarrassing, the automatism, and of course the seizures that made the bed shake. Usually that's followed by either wetting the bed or vomiting or both, and then sleeping very deeply. You want to test her right now? Chris asked. Yes. Yes, I think we should do it immediately. But she's going to need sedation. If she moves or jerks, it'll void the results. So may I give her, say, 25 milligrams of Bilibrium? Jesus, do what you have to, was shaken, Chris told him. She accompanied him to the examining room, and when Reagan saw him readying the hypodermic, she screamed and filled the air with a torrent of obscenities. Oh, honey, it's to help you, Chris pleaded. She held Reagan still while Klein administered the injection. I'll be back, Klein said, and while a nurse wheeled the EEG apparatus into the room, he left to attend to another patient. When he returned a short time later, the Librium still had not taken effect. Klein seemed surprised. That was quite a strong dose, he remarked to Chris. He injected another 25 milligrams, left, came back, and finding Reagan now tractable and docile, he placed saline-tipped electrodes to her scalp. We put four on each side, he explained to Chris. That enables us to take a brainwave reading from the left and right side of the brain, and then we compare them. Why? Well, the deviations could be significant. For example, I had a patient who used to hallucinate. He'd see things and hear things. Well, I found a discrepancy in comparing the left and right readings of his brainwaves and discovered that actually the man was hallucinating on just one side of his head. Oh, that's wild, Chris marveled. Yeah, sure is. The left eye and ear functioned normally. Only the right side had visions and heard things. Well, all right now, let's see, Klein said as he turned on the EEG machine and then pointed to the waves on the fluorescent screen. Now, that's both sides together, he explained. What I'm looking for now are spiky waves. He patterned in the air with his index finger. Especially waves of very high amplitude coming at 4 to 8 per second. If they're there, then it's temporal lobe. He studied the pattern of the brain wave carefully, but discovered no dysrhythmia, no spikes, no flattened domes. And when he switched to comparison readings, the results were negative as well. Klein frowned. He couldn't understand it. He repeated the procedure and found no change. Klein brought in a nurse to attend to Reagan and returned to his office with her mother. Chris sat down and said, okay, so what's the story? Pensive, arms folded across his chest. Klein was sitting on the edge of his desk. Well, the EEG would have proved that she had it, he said. But the lack of dysrhythmia doesn't prove to me conclusively that she doesn't. Yeah, it might be hysteria, but the pattern before and after her convulsion was much too striking. Chris furrowed her brow. You know, you keep on saying that, Doc. Convulsion? What exactly is the name of this disease?
Well, it isn't a disease, Klein said somberly and quietly.
Well, then what do you call it, Doc? I mean, specifically. You know it is epilepsy. Oh, good Christ.
Now let's hold it, soothed Klein. I can see that, like most of the general public, your impression of epilepsy is exaggerated and probably largely mythical. Isn't it hereditary? Chris said, wincing.
That's one of the myths, Klein told her calmly. At least most doctors seem to think so. Look, practically anyone can be made to convulse. You see, most of us are born with a pretty high threshold of resistance to convulsions, some with a low one. So the difference between you and an epileptic is a matter of degree. That's all, just degree. It is not a disease.
Then what is it, a freaking hallucination? It's a disorder, a controllable disorder. And there are many, many types of it, Mrs. McNeil. For example, you're sitting here now, and for a second you seem to go blank, let's say, and you miss a little bit of what I'm saying?
Well, now that's a kind of epilepsy.
Yeah, it's a true epileptic attack.
Yeah, well, that isn't Reagan, Doc. It's not my girl. I don't believe it.
And how come it's happening just all of a sudden?
Well, look, you're right. And we still aren't sure what she's got. And I grant you that maybe you were right in the first place. Very possibly, it is psychosomatic, although I doubt it. To answer your question, any number of changes in the function of the brain can trigger a convulsion in the epileptic. Could be worry, fatigue, emotional stress, even a particular note on a musical instrument. I had a patient who never used to have a seizure except on a bus when he was a block away from home. Well, we finally discovered what was causing it. Flickering light from a white slat fence reflected in the window of the bus. Now, at another time of day, or if the bus had been going at a different speed, he wouldn't have convulsed, you see. He had a lesion, a scar in the brain that was caused by some childhood disease. In the case of your daughter, the scar, if she has one, would be forward, up front, in the temporal lobe. And when it's hit by a particular electrical impulse of a certain wavelength and periodicity, it triggers a burst of abnormal reactions from deep within a focus in the lobe. Do you see?
I'll take your word. But I'll tell you the truth, Doc. I don't understand how her whole personality could have changed. In the temporal lobe, that's extremely common and can last for days or even weeks. It isn't rare to find destructive, even criminal behavior. There's such a big change, in fact, that 200 or 300 years ago, people with temporal lobe disorders were often considered to be possessed by a devil. They were what? Taken over by a demon, you know, something like a superstitious version of split personality. Closing her eyes, Gliss lowered her forehead onto a fist.
Listen, tell me something good, she huskily murmured.
Well, now, don't be alarmed. If it is a lesion, in a way, she's lucky. Then all we'd have to do is remove the scar. Oh, swell. Or it could be just pressure on the brain. Listen, I'd like to have some x-rays taken of her skull. There's a radiologist here in the building, and maybe I can get him to take you right away. May I call him?
Shit, yes, go ahead. Let's do it. Do whatever you have to.
Klein called and set it up. They would take her immediately, they told him. He hung up the phone and began writing a prescription. Room 21 on the second floor, he said. Then I'll probably call you tomorrow or Thursday. I'd like a neurologist in on this. In the meantime, I'm taking her off the Ritalin. Let's Let's try her on Librium for a while. He ripped the prescription sheet from the pad and handed it over. I like to stay close to her, Mrs. McNeil. In these walking trance states, if that's what it is, it's always possible for her to hurt herself. Is your bedroom close to hers? Yeah, it is. Oh, that's fine. Ground floor? No, second floor. Big windows in her bedroom? Well, one. What's the deal? Well, I tried to keep it closed. You might even have them put a lock on it, maybe. In a trance state, she might fall through it. I once had a patient, Chris finished, with the trace of a wry, weary smile. Klein grinned. I guess I do have a lot of them, don't I? Yeah, a couple. Chris propped her face on her hand and leaned pensively forward. You know, I thought of something else just now. And what was that? Well, like after a fit, you were saying that she'd fall right away dead asleep. Like on Saturday night. I mean, didn't you say that? Well, yes, Klein nodded. Yeah, I did. Well, then, how come those other times when she said that her bed was shaking, she was always wide awake? Well, you didn't tell me that. Well, that's how it was. She looked fine. She'd just come to my room and then asked to get into bed with me. Any bedwetting, vomiting? Chris shook her head. No, she was fine. Klein frowned and gently chewed on his lip. Well, let's look at those x-rays, he finally told her. Feeling drained and numb, Chris shepherded Reagan to the radiologist, stayed at her side while the x-rays were taken, took her home. She'd been strangely mute since the second injection, and Chris made an effort now to engage her. You want to play Monopoly or something, sweetheart? Slightly shaking her head, Reagan stared at her mother with unfocused eyes that seemed to be retracted into infinite remoteness. I'm feeling real sleepy, she said. The voice belonged to the eyes. Then, turning, she climbed up the stairs to her bedroom. Worriedly watching her, must be the Librium, Chris reflected. Then at last she sighed and went into the kitchen. She poured coffee and sat down at the breakfast nook table with Sharon. How'd it go? Sharon asked her. Oh, Christ. Chris fluttered the prescription slip onto the table. Better call and get that filled, she said, and then explained what the doctor had told her. If I'm busy or out, keep a real good eye on her, would you, Cher? Klein told me that... Dawning. Sudden. Oh, that reminds me. Chris got up from the table and went up to Reagan's bedroom, where she found her asleep underneath her bed covers. Chris moved to the window, tightened the latch, and then stared down below. Facing out from the side of the house, the window directly overlooked the precipitous public staircase that plunged down to M Street, far below. Oh, boy. Better call a locksmith right away. Chris returned to the kitchen and added the chore to the list from which Karen sat working, gave Willie the dinner menu, returned a call from her agent concerning the film she'd been asked to direct. Well, so what about the script? The agent wanted to know. Yeah, it's great, Ed. Come on, let's do it. When does it go? Oh, well, your segment's in July, so you're going to have to start preparing. Right away.
You mean now?
Yeah, I mean now. This isn't acting, Chris. You're involved in a lot of the pre-production. Got to work with the set designer, the costume designer, the makeup artist, the producer. And you'll have to pick a cameraman and a cutter and block out your shots. Come on, Chris, you know the drill. Oh, shit. Chris breathed out disconsolately. You got a problem? Yes, I do, Ed. It's Reagan. She's very, very sick. Hey, I'm sorry, kid.
Sure.
Chris, what is it? I don't know yet, Ed. I'm waiting for some tests. Listen, Ed. I can't leave her.
So who says to leave her?
No. You don't understand, Ed. I need to be at home with her. She needs my attention. Look, I just can't explain it, Eddie. It's too complicated. So why don't we hold off for a while? No, honey, we can't. They want to try for the music hall over Christmas, Chris. And I think that they're pushing that now. Oh, for Christ's sakes, Ed. They can wait 2 weeks? Now, come on. Listen, you bugged me that you wanted to direct. And now all of you, yes, yes, I know I wanted Ed. Ed, I really, really want it bad. But, Ed, I'm sorry. I'll just have to tell him I need some more time. Okay? And when I do, we're going to blow it. Now, that's my opinion. Chris, listen. They don't want you anyway. That's not news. They're just doing this for more. You know that. And I think if they go back to him now and say she isn't too sure she wants to do it yet, he'll have an out. Look, you do what you want. I don't care. There's no money in this thing unless it hits. But if you want it, I'm telling you, I ask for a delay and we blow it. Now then, what should I tell them? Chris sighed. Oh, boy. Yeah, I know, Chris. It's not easy. No, it isn't, Ed. Okay, listen. Maybe if... Chris thought. Then she shook her head. Ah, oh, never mind, Ed. They'll just have to wait, she said. Can't be helped. Your decision. Yep. Let me know what they say. Of course. Meantime, Chris, I'm really sorry about your daughter. Thanks, Ed. Take care. You too. Chris hung up the phone in a state of depression, lit up a cigarette, then mentioned to Sharon, I talked to Howard, by the way, did I tell you? Oh, yeah? When? Did you tell him about Reagan? Yeah, I told him you ought to come see her. And is he? Is he coming? I don't know. I really don't think so. You'd think he'd make an effort. Yeah, I know. Chris sighed. Do you know, Sharon, you've got to understand his hang-up. What do you mean? Oh, the whole Mr. Chris McNeil thing. Rags was a part of it. She was in, and he was out. Always me and Rags together on the magazine covers. Me and Rags in the layouts. Mother and daughter, pixie twins. Chris moodily tapped ash from his cigarette with a finger. Ah, nuts, who knows? It's all mixed up. It's a mess. But it's hard to get hacked with him, Cher. I just can't. She reached out for a book by Sharon's elbow. So it's this. What are you reading? Oh, I forgot. It's for you. Mrs. Perrin dropped it by. She was here? Yeah, this morning. Said she's sorry she missed you and she's going out of town, but she'll call you as soon as she's back. Chris nodded and glanced at the title of the book. A Study of Devil Worship and Related Occult Phenomena. She opened it and found a penned note. Dear Chris, I happened by the Georgetown University Library bookstore, and I picked this up for you. It has some chapters about Black Mass. You should read it all, however. I think you'll find the other sections particularly interesting. See you soon, Mary Jo. Sweet lady, said Chris. Yeah, she is. Chris riffled through the pages of the book. What's the scoop on Black Mass, pretty hairy? I don't know, answered Sharon. I haven't read it. Did your guru tell you not to, kid? Sharon stretched. Oh, that stuff turns me off. Oh, really? And so what happened to your Jesus complex? Come on. Chris slid the book across the table to Sharon. Hey, read it and tell me what happens. What, get nightmares? What do you think you get paid for, Sharon? Throwing up. I can do that for myself, Chris muttered as she picked up the evening paper. All you have to do is stick your business manager's advice down your throat. You're vomiting blood for a week. Chris abruptly put the paper aside. You turn on the radio, Sharon. Get the news. Sharon had dinner at the house with Chris and then left for a date. She forgot the book. Chris saw it on the table and thought about reading it, but in the end, she felt too weary. And so she left it on the table and walked upstairs. She looked in on Reagan, who was under the covers and apparently sleeping through the night. Chris then checked the window again. Locked shut. Leaving the room, Chris made sure to leave the door wide open. And before getting into bed that night, she did the same with her own. She watched part of a television movie, then slept. The next morning, the devil worship book had mysteriously vanished from the table. No one noticed.